You are listening to the Furler Bros Tech Podcast, episode 271, hashtag live authentic.
Season 6, episode 271 of the Furler Bros Tech Podcast. Today is December the 4th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and still unable to get over Manchester by the Sea, even though it's been nearly a week, is my brother James Furlow.
So, apparently it was super good or something.
Hold or on. Something.
It's been a week and I've totally forgotten what setting to use for you now.
That's
all right. I think that's right. A little behind the scenes, I have to do a certain sound option in order to get the opening music. I can say it, to get the opening music.
You're ready for this.
And then I have to, but Matthew gets an echo as a result of it because I'm doing like see double loop stuff and whatever. And then I have to temporarily put it back. Mic, headset. Okay, I think I got it. I think we're good. Anyway, so I didn't actually see it, but you did, right?
Yes.
And that's what you're doing.
Manchester by the Sea.
I saw a commercial, I think. Is that what I saw? I feel like it had to have been a commercial, which I guess would be a trailer. But
yes,
it looked like a whatever. I don't know.
So my girlfriend.
No, I saw someone tweet about it. That's what it was. And they're like, going to watch this on a date. That's what it was.
It's a heck of a day. My night movie choice. So Diane and I went to see it last Sunday night because we'd already done the podcast, and I was like really excited about it. And I was
I remember that.
If you watch the trailers, it's kind of a sad movie. Like, that's not surprising. Yet somehow it's surprising. Once you get into it, it's a bit of a punch in the gut. And it's one of those things where it's like, by Wednesday, Diane and I had to just be like, no, we can't talk about this anymore. Like, we can't really? Just like call each other on the verge of tears and be like, oh, you remember that movie? Like,
wow.
Is it
based off a true story?
No, that's the worst part. Is it's like it's fictional characters, but it's just, you know.
Dude, when I cry about that stuff all the time.
I know.
Jessie makes fun of me. She's like, you don't cry about real life stuff, but you cry for movies. Like, it's compelling. I don't know.
But Star Lord. it's one of those things where it's like when you get a really, really, really well acted movie. You know, it's like, it's hilarious because his entire character is this, like, this stoic, unemotional guy, right? Casey Affleck, Ben Affleck's younger brother. And you'd think that you could get, like, any bad actor to play the part. But what it really does is it's like, there are moments where he has to be emotional and actually, like, show himself to be like a real person, but it's very short chunks of time that he has to deliver just like a stellar performance to convince you that this is actually what this character is feeling, and they do a pretty good job of making all the characters feel very authentic given the circumstances they're in, and the circumstances feel very authentic. And so the whole thing just comes across as very believable. Like, yeah, this can actually happen. This probably has happened. And I'm really sad now. It's good. It's not good in the same way that Doctor Strange was good.
Clearly.
But it's really good.
Okay. Speaking of, kind of, I'm going to try to change the tone a little bit.
There we go.
Did you get your tickets for the 16th?
No!
Or the 17th?
We started the conversation for the Star Wars movie.
Well, conversation's already over if you haven't yet.
I know. Well, that's not true. We're in an area where there's like 8 IMAX theaters, so we can still go Thursday or Friday night anytime we want.
Okay.
It's just not that big of a deal. So we're taking, we'll do it this week.
We're doing a 7:10 on Friday.
Oh, man.
It's lined up. It's going to be good.
That's awesome. Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Which will also be good, but for different reasons, as you stated.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't try too much on sentimental value and actually have a good story.
Supposedly, George Lucas has already seen it, and Gareth Edwards, the director, has said that he really liked it, and it's the most important opinion that he's gotten to date. But yeah, see, the thing is that, like...
Dude, what's he going to say?
Yeah, but this is the thing. He didn't say that about episode 7.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, there is...
but how much of that is, like, he learned? Like, you know what I mean?
Supposedly... Okay, and this is all kind
of... Dude, I love hearsay.
Drama inside, you know, stuff. But supposedly George Lucas had, like, had a plan for episode 7, 8, and 9. And... it'd keep the story, like, moving, they'd be different, like, it'd be, like... Because his whole thing with episode 1, 2, and 3 was he didn't just want to rehash 4, 5, and 6 and just, you know, go on a bank. He wanted them to be these, like, different, unique stories and, like, and change...
But also their own in there.
Yeah, exactly. To be part of the continuum, but to be their own sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Not, very much not like Fantastical Beasts.
Exactly. And so Star Wars, the mouse was like, yeah, no, definitely, like, we'll look at your stuff, we'll think about it, like,
we'll file it, exactly,
we'll definitely take this into consideration, and then they took none of it,
we'll embed them,
exactly, then they did not consider his opinion or his ideas at all. They completely remade it. They largely, like, he thought that the story was going in a certain direction for Han, Leia, and Luke, and Star Wars was like, nope, just sadness for all three of them. Like, just very much felt like they took what is essentially his life's work is the first six Star Wars. Pretending like the first three didn't happen, and the conclusion of the last three was just completely unwrote it, in order to basically soft reboot the original trilogy. And he was not thrilled with that. Whereas this one, I guess, is much more of, like, the fact that they're using the same actors, like, actors from the prequels are in this movie. Like the Mon Mothma character, really? Same actress.
What was she in the third one? I mean, obviously she was Mon Mothma. I know that, but what part of the movie? Because I saw her and I just went, oh, Mon Mothma. But maybe that's just because of.
I can't remember. The
movie that she's in. Or what was the first movie? Many Bothans Died to bring us this.
Exactly. Yeah, but what's his name?
So is that girl Bothan? Never mind, I'm not going to worry about it, because that's what the entire movie is about. I'm just going to let that go. We'll figure it out.
It's going to be okay.
I hope that gets answered, that there's some small reference to Bothans, and I hope it's more than small. And that a lot of them
please
die.
Explain how they died.
really weird.
But Organa, Senator Organa, which is Leia's father, is in one, I guess.
He's in it? Okay, cool.
Yeah. So it's like, Disney, I guess, finally gotten around to acknowledging that the prequels exist, which I guess Lucas was very appreciative of. And then also they didn't like, and also it just, it's very much the same, like, same flavor as episode 4 in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And almost as
important. Ragtag Rebels, making it work. Yeah.
Right. It's an offshoot. It's a different movie than what everything else has been, which has kind of been his whole goal. So in a lot of ways, he's like, okay, like Disney, like you said, he's learned it. They're going to do what they're going to do with the main movies. And he doesn't get much of a say. But, like, his vision and his hopes, like, still have a chance to breathe.
Well, and especially when they're doing something like this, they're inserting it into his, you know, his set of movies. Like, you can't just go off and do your own thing and undo something.
Right.
you know, because you're like, no, 4, 5, 6 happened, so like deal with it. And you kind of got to play by what it, the direction that he saw it going in. I'm pumped also about the Han Solo one. I hope there's a Kessel run somewhere in there.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. Sets a record.
Yeah. Hopefully 12 parsecs long.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Parsecs, 12.
Yeah. You know what I really like about that is that they're definitely, because they're gonna do it right too, which is they're gonna be like, the Star Wars nerds are, they're nerdy enough that they're gonna be like, it's a unit of distance, and it's all about like how close you have to go in order to get, like, in order, you don't judge how close you pass by a black hole is judged by how fast you can get by it. The faster you can go, the closer you can get. So 12 parsecs being a distance is a destiny, like the shorter the distance, meaning the faster you're going. And if they're gonna do it right, and everybody's gonna be like, yeah, 12 parsecs. Nice. Or they'll just be like, 12 parsecs is a unit of measure, and all the nerds will be like, I hate this, Disney's the worst.
You know they're gonna do that.
Yeah, that's probably,
it's, make it accessible. It'll be fine. You know what? It'll be fine. We'll see. We'll know with Rogue One, actually. That'll answer a lot of questions. But I'm excited.
That's true.
Anyways, yeah, we'll hopefully talk all about that next week.
No, yeah, 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks from now. I know. We'll be barreling into Christmas.
Yeah, speaking of Christmas, we put up a tree this afternoon.
Oh, nice.
And put up the lights and had a fire going on my Apple TV. Downloaded fireplace app. It's pretty funny. Christmas music going in the background. But we put our lights on a timer, like most modern folks, unlike those Neanderthals that have to plug them in and out. But I'll be honest, I put it on the timer, and you could hear just a little, you know, it's not bad. You know,
yeah.
And I was just like, how much is a Wemo?
Digital electronics.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I just find it and I was like, man, that tick, I'm probably gonna have a Wemo by the end of this year. I can already feel it.
That's really funny. James,
yeah,
we're not here to talk about Star Wars and Manchester by the Sea and Christmas, though. We're here to talk about real things this week. Like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations, dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I'm realizing I didn't add... Where are you?
I don't know.
I was going to mention in... If this, then that thing, but it's... I'll figure it out, I guess. Because I was going to make a comment about it, but I was going to wait until the article. I'll figure it out. We will talk about it at some time. We will talk about if this and that. But anyways, but first, my disclosure is that I work for HPI. However, I do not represent them, despite also founding them, or any of their opinions. I also am part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
Nice. I like it. If you want to follow us at the week, we are we do things on the internet. You can follow them. One of those places is Twitter. I'm at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is NextWiggin4.
I am James Furlow. Everywhere.
Across the board.
Even the .com.
And .com and stuff like that. If you want to get more about the show, though, the place to go is furloughbros.com. There, everything we talk about this week, all the articles, videos, audio clips, anything that comes up, it will be there, linked and commented. It's pretty good. So go there, check it out. Also, if you want that sort of information delivered to your email account every week, we've got a newsletter that does just that. You can sign up for it at furloughbros.com. And, yeah, also, we are on Patreon, so if you'd like to support this show, it would be fantastic, and we'd super appreciate it. We think Patreon's a great platform for supporting art and products you like us, and yeah, check it out,
definitely. So one of the places that you can follow us on is Instagram, And there was a very interesting story this week titled Confessions of an Instagram Influencer.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh, it's interesting. Oh, it's so compelling. It's a bit of a read. It's on Bloomberg. But oh, so fascinating. So there's this dude, just a regular guy who's like, he just posts pictures of himself, his friends, his spouse, his cat, his kid. He's like, you know, nothing special. But for this article was learning that if you're an influencer, put that in quotes,
right,
you can get paid money to post onto Instagram.
I want to do that.
And we're not talking, so here's kind of the general layout. 10,000 to 100,000 followers, you could get paid up to $250 a post.
Yeah, you know, that could add up.
100,000 to 250,000 followers, $1,000 a post.
That adds up real quick.
Yeah, dude. You do a couple a week?
Yeah, that's good money right there. Yeah, you do 3-4 a week. That's real good money.
Yeah, seriously. 400,000 to 100.5. No, to 1.5 million, which is a lot of people. You could get up to $5,000 per post. That's money. 1.5 to 50 million followers, which, like, who, whatever, $10,000 a post. And then if you have 50 million followers, they're like, well, pretty much you're a Kardashian, but you could be earning $100,000 per post.
That's
a lot of people to begin with.
That's a lot of dough.
Yeah, right? So he was like, how hard could it be to be an influencer? You know? Well, and so he's like,
first question is, are you a hot chick?
No, he's not. I would say
he's gonna start with the start downhill going up.
Doesn't,
though, I get
doesn't,
it
doesn't help. But anyway, so he was like, I'm gonna do this. He said he gave himself a month to get some sort of sponsorship.
Okay,
so essentially that meant he had to become an influencer. And then, you know, do that. So he started meeting with people and was like, all right, well, what do I do? what's an influencer? And he learned a couple things really quick. The first one is he was like, oh, so fascinating. Just so fascinating. They're like, well, you need a makeover.
yeah.
Like, we're going to get you a haircut and we're going to give you a stylist. And he goes, I cannot in good faith publish how much time and how much money I spent on a haircut. He's like, it's embarrassing.
Dude, again,
but he did it. But he did it. And then he was like, apparently there's like an influencer agency out there. Like, their sole job is to work with Instagram influencers and then pair them with sponsors as well. And so we started talking with them and they were like, he had like 100 followers, I think, something like that. And they're like, initially, like, you can't even get into the door with them unless you have, it's something like over, it's like over 1,000 followers or 2,000 followers. So, like, they're not like, you can't get an appointment type of thing. but they're like, yeah, you're doing a story. We get it. We'll chat with you. So anyway, so they were like, all right, here's what we're going to do. He was like, at first I thought people just go around. What?
It's a pretty good haircut.
Yeah.
I just opened up the article.
Okay.
I get what he was doing.
Yeah. But he, so he's like, I thought they went around and took pictures. Like, no, that's not how this works. And so, they're like, well, what do you have for clothes? And they started talking to him and he started describing it. They went, we're gonna let you borrow some from here so that you can, you know, use them for a day. He's like, for a day? They're like, yeah, and we'll let you borrow a photographer. And they literally were like, he had different outfits. They went out into the city with the photographer and took photos all day, all in one day. He's like, and the idea was to find an interesting background. He's like, bricks or fences or some sort of graffiti something or other.
Bricks or fences.
That you could bokeh. you know, effect on. He's like, and then like just doing stuff. He goes, I can't tell you how many times they were like, just jump off this sidewalk for us. and I'm like, walk across the street here whistling. And he's like, just giving him direction. And they had another person who's an influencer, like, be there to kind of like coach him and mentor him and be like, act casual, act serious, act moody. And he was like, okay. And they're like, so these are your, and then, so they got a whole, like, essentially did the month's worth of photos of him that day.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, we went out for like 12 hours. And they said they ended up even going out a second day just to get some other things. And which I'm like, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. But he's like, hey, this is what you do. And then it's like, and they were told you post 3 times a day. So I'm like, yeah, that's how like I Has Cheeseburger does it and everything. That's like the optimal number. There's another one, anyways, 3 times a day. Like you got to post to Instagram 3 times a day. I was like, okay, got it. And then like, but not all of them can be of you either. So you have to like pick other stuff. And so he did it for a little while and the agency called him and said, you're not doing this well. Like, like these, like your breakfast photos are horrible. And he was like, oh, what do I do? Right. There's a stock photographer over here. Just buy a whole bunch of images from her.
Oh my gosh.
And so he's like, so he's talking to her and they're like, and you know, food is good. Sunsets, buildings, those types of things. Those do really, really well. So that's what you want to focus on. And when he called her, he was like, so, like, how do I do attribution for you? And she's like, you don't, you pay me. Like, these are supposed to be you. Like, don't, like, maybe give me a shout out once or twice during your thing. He's like, but no, you don't, what are you doing? What are you talking about? This is you. I'm like a ghost photographer for you. And so he had all these photos. I was just like, boop, 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 you know, spreading them out throughout the month. And then this is the super interesting part that I thought was like just crazy. There's a bot. And I guarantee you, you've gotten this one. There's a bot that he uses that he sets up certain parameters, certain search terms that will then go out to different accounts and post on his behalf things like sweet photo or a thumbs up or hey, I really like that. And he was like, just randomly picks from a list of his things and he goes, and it just does it. And I'm trying to remember. Let's see here. That's how they get. He was talking about you always got to use hashtags. He's like, you have to use about 20 hashtags, and he used a hashtag generator, which almost all of them had like hashtag live authentic. He's like, it's so dumb.
Live authentic.
yeah, but he's like, you got to do. He said like his very first one that he did. Again, he was like, it just auto-generate. He took the photo, put some information about the photo into this auto-generator, and he's like, I had to not read them, because it was like hashtag men with class, men's fashion, a game of portraits, hype beast, featured palette, make portraits, oh human effect, the manity, and of course, live authentic. He was just like, oh my gosh. Let's see here. He was, let's see here. He paid $10 for every 30 days, and it's Instagress is the name of it. It would do stuff like, wow, pretty awesome. This is everything. And naturally, clapping hands emoji. He said, on a typical day, he goes, I, or the bot on my behalf, would leave about 900 likes and 240 comments. By the end of this month, he had liked over 28,000 posts and had commented over 7,000 times. And he's like, and that's how, I mean, I'm sure you've seen that, right? And you're like, who the heck are you? Tap.
Right.
And they go, oh, just some random rando. Okay, cool. It's pretty funny. He said he... So the clothing, you go out a single day, you hire someone for your stock photography, you have a bot to do all the comments for you. So pretty nice. He even had one where he was like, it was this picture of this food bowl, and there was like some yellow stuff in it. And one of his friends was like, hey, what's that yellow stuff? And he was like, I have no idea. I didn't take, I, like, delicious? It wasn't his picture. He had no idea.
He never actually ate it. That's really
funny. And that was his thing. He was like, his friends were like, what the heck is wrong with you? And even his mom was like, are you okay? Like, do we need to chat? And yes. His look had totally changed. And yeah, pretty nuts. By the end of it, he ended with about 1,400 followers by the end of the month. So he was like, all right, you can start to extrapolate out there. If you keep this up, like, you could be there. By around his 800th follower, he got a breakthrough. There was a guy named, or a company called Marco Bedford that had a clothing line. And they said, you want to collaborate? And he was like, yes. So essentially, they sent him a t-shirt and he wore it. And he was like, he had to plead with his wife, who had come to despise my transformation, to follow him out on Sunday. I was to take a picture of him wearing this shirt where he's like stroking his hair back and like, oh, just life's awesome. The shirt normally retails for $60. And
it's a pretty good shirt.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I know, right? Now, I think he... I don't remember what he said he got paid to do it or something. But anyways, he was like, that's how it works. And he put in there a hashtag, like hashtag ad or hashtag SP for sponsored post. He's like, that's the not-so-subtle way of telling everybody, oh, yeah, this was paid for. Yeah, so anyways, pretty crazy. And then he stopped, but then was like, well, now what do I do with all these followers? I'm now an influencer of sorts. He did say, like, the math doesn't totally make sense to do it this way, because he spent a couple grand, I think, doing all this work, which I'm like, well, you know, I guess, like, if you have the money, you do it that way. But if you have the time, then you just spend your time doing it.
Right.
Obviously trying to hold down a full-time job to make it happen. But
you see, that's the thing, is that like the first, like they said, you know, we're not even going to talk to, generally speaking, they're not even going to talk to people till you get to a certain number. And for a lot of the kids that are doing this, it's, they got time and looks. And so what they're going to do is they're going to take a bunch of photos and they're going to read the blogs on how to do this. Okay, so I take pictures of myself scantily clad, and I use my iPhone, and I do a bunch of hashtags, and I comment on random pictures, and then you get to, you know, a couple of thousand followers, you start to make a little bit of money, and then there's a tipping point problem where to keep growing your base, you just can't do it by yourself, and that's when you go and you hire one of these agencies that say, okay, we'll fill in all the gaps. We'll help you really create a network, and eventually we'll get you a date with a basketball player, and, you know, we'll do the rest of it and be an IG model.
So crazy, man. So crazy. There's a part of me that's like, it's kind of awesome. There's another part of me that's like, oh, I don't know. For me, like, from a how could you hack this standpoint, it's very fascinating.
That's one of the most interesting parts to me about like talking to like different startups and kind of how they go through the thing, and just realizing that like that a lot of these like organic startups that like, you know, oh, I had a really good idea and, you know, I started sharing it with people and all of a sudden it, like, turned into this big thing, and like, you know, now our little social network has this much traffic and stuff, and you're like, dude, you hired a consultancy agency that, like, their whole deal is they've got connection with fraternities and sororities. And they go in and they, like, tell them, hey, we'll pay you this much if you use this app, post this much, and get these many members on. When they just, they artificially get you the first 10%, and if your platform has any chance of success, well, then you'll build momentum on your own. But that first little firestorm, yeah, you just pay for that.
Makes sense.
And totally that's, yeah. Sense. But it's amazing how much of that has to look it's amazing how much of that success has to look as though, no, it's just you authentically doing it on your own. Like, nobody can know that you paid for the first, you know, the first little shot in the arm.
Yeah, seriously. But, oh, man, such a... We'll post the whole story at furloughbros.com/271. It's fascinating.
Check out that haircut. It's pretty good.
If you're into yourself. Which, who isn't?
Yeah. Super funny. Let's be honest, James. Sometimes in order to get ahead, you got to do something crazy. You got to go above and beyond.
And just by the means? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. And you know what? Sometimes that means paying a consultancy to get you on Instagram and going. Sometimes that means breaking federal and state law in order to get the attention of big companies. So this is awesome. So Otto is a company we've talked about before, OTTO. They are a company that got acquired by Uber earlier this year, and their whole deal is they are building automated driving systems that are meant to be retrofitted onto semi trucks. So their reason for existing is to try to automate semis. And they're Google alums, and they're just like, it's a pretty impressive group of engineers. They got bought by Uber, so Uber is obviously leveraging their stuff for their self-driving car, and also they want to be the future of transportation in every single way. So yeah, it's kind of a big deal, but it turns out that they're having a hard time kind of getting onto the radar of anybody, because they wanted to be acquired by a bigger company who had interest in this as a long-term project.
Yeah.
And a company like Uber. So what they did was they made a promo video of their truck.
I remember it. Looked awesome.
Driving. Yeah, it's great. They've got the engineer sitting in the back of the truck on his laptop, but there's nobody in the driver's seat, and is driving down the the Nevada freeways. Yeah. Turns out that's really illegal. and they have video evidence of it.
Well, they got acquired by the right company then.
Yeah, exactly. Their whole deal. But this is what's like really funny about it, is it's like really illegal. Like not even kind of sort of well under certain circumstances. Like, no, it's explicitly not allowed by Nevada state regulations. You need somebody behind the wheel. And obviously, since a lot of this is being regulated on the state level presently,
I'm rewatching the video. There's not a single car next to it right now.
Yeah.
There's a ton of cameras everywhere. I mean, if there was an issue, I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's not a closed track, though. It's just a convenient thing that there's no cars there. It's just, they filmed enough footage and cut together a minute long promo where there weren't any other cars in frame. That's all they did. But they were filming it on open freeway.
Yeah, yeah. So you could see other cars that's coming up on.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, yeah. So this is what I really love about it, though. But the reason why they did this, and the reason why it worked so well, is because it turns out one of the guys who is a co-founder, one of the co-founders of Otto, has been involved in the automated car driving, you know, field for a long time, and so it helped in writing the regulations that Nevada has set up for regulating everything, like. They were instrumental in doing this. One of the things that they seems now intentionally, but one of the things that they didn't put into the regulation was any sort of consequence for breaking that law.
Yeah.
Break it. Exactly. So it's like, there's all the regulations saying you can't do it, but there's not actual any, there's no punishment involved. There's no jail time. There's no fines. They can't be sued. They were just told, don't do it. And then, you know, what's the use of what's the harm in breaking the law if you can't be punished for it? And that was kind of their strategy. So Nevada is currently in the frantically changing those laws because they're like, you've got to be kidding me. We can't do anything to these guys. Yeah. But I thought it was pretty clever. Don't break the rules. Write the rules.
What is that? Yeah, that's interesting. For me, the question is like, what does that say about a company who takes a shortcut at that stage? But makes you
worried.
You know, it's funny with stuff like that. I don't know. Sometimes you can take that as like it's a company, like it's a negative sign for the company. And other times it's just like I think it really depends on the people. That could be a really bad sign for if the type of people in it are just like people who are, you know, really like they're cutting corners, they're cheaters, they're scoundrels. Or it could just be people that are really, really, really resourceful. And they're gonna try some crazy stuff. But, you know, they're like, look, we were safe. We didn't hurt anybody. We weren't doing something that was dangerous. It's just a little bit illegal. And technically, like, we were willing to deal with the consequences of the laws we were breaking.
I had a professor, a strategy professor, where that was his, like, he goes, yeah, I mean, if you're okay with the consequences, break the law. Like, it's cause and effect, whatever.
Yeah.
Except for him, he goes, I'm willing to pay speeding tickets all day long, so I don't care about the speeding limit.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think that's the point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it's funny. I've had this conversation before, but in regards to, I was in a fraternity in college, and the school has all sorts of really, really ridiculous regulations. To this day, I think they're ridiculous. Not just as an 18-year-old, but as a 13-year or 30-year-old. I'm like, yeah, that was real dumb that they did that. And we'd break those rules. Like, we'd just be like, no, we're not going to pay attention to that. We're gonna do our own thing. And the whole goal of the organization, like, as a, you know, quote-unquote secret society, a big part of that is literally, like, keeping the secrets of, like, how do we conspire as an organization to break the rules in such a way that we're protected if we get caught, that we won't get caught because we plan ahead. Like, you build all these different strategies around, like, and it was like, and realizing that there's a certain amount of that in society of just dumb rules that everybody knows is a dumb rule, but it's a rule. And so if you're going to break the rule, you got to be really smart about how you're going to break it. And learning that that's a thing that companies do. There's legitimate reasons that people, you know, obviously if it's people of poor character doing that, that's going to end really poorly. But doing that does not necessarily mean you're a person of poor character. Was the lesson taken away?
Oh boy, that's a slippery slope you just
walked upon
there.
Hey, it's
yeah, I guess from a secular point of view, sure. I see the point that you're making. If you, again, it's that same concept, right? If you're willing to deal with the consequences or take the precautions to try to avoid the consequences, sure, get away with what you can, right? That was Socrates' whole point, right? If you were invisible, you would do anything and everything because you wouldn't get away with it. So
you could get away with it, yeah.
Yeah, and so so I understand what you're saying, and you're saying essentially that's what companies do. I don't know.
Well, No, not all. Definitely not all. But I mean, I don't know. It goes back to the whole, have you ever copied a CD that you owned and that you played music on? It's illegal. Like, it's against the Millennium Digital Rights Act. Like, that's, but we do that. Why? Because it's a dumb regulation. The idea is that it's like, it's a dumb regulation that defeats the whole point. Like, it's not protecting anything. It's an over-regulation. And it's not protecting the core idea of, well, yeah, we want people to still pay for music. Like, that's the thing. But you know, and whereas the lawyers are like, no, the whole idea is you pay for music every time you use it. Like,
so yeah, then, but the issue is then you get into a debate about, well, what's a dumb law versus what's one that we should actually,
well, that, like,
you know, whatever, honor.
And I have no problem with the idea that we would have that debate continually. That's specifically the whole point of our government, is it's a continuous debate.
To break it.
What are dumb laws? And what are, like, well, you know, and it's,
yeah,
like,
but even the idea is, you even the state is a dumb law, but you're supposed to follow it until it's changed. You put in the effort to change the rule.
Even the states and the federal government go through this dance, whether you're talking about sanctuary cities that are saying, no, we're going to protect a different type immigration regulations in the federal government, or weed, whether that's legal. Yeah. It's federally illegal, but states are protecting it. Like, what is that? But, you know, it's a slippery slope. I'll completely agree with you. And if you're a person of poor character and you're taking advantage of that, you will slide down quickly.
Yeah, and at least with the states, right? They're publicly saying it. We disagree. We're publicly coming out and saying it. You know what I mean? That's different. I mean, that would be the equivalent would be Otto saying, we think this is a dumb law. FYI, we're going to be on the freeway at this time.
Yeah.
You know, and just being, and we're going to say, we're going to do all the precautions we can, or can we get some sort of exemption? And again, there's a difference between, yes, there's a tension between the state and federal governing bodies, but that's a different relationship than a company.
Yeah, I would agree. But I guess that's my whole point. That's why character becomes so critical in these situations, because it's what you're saying is that the inherent character of the states is such that it the relationship is such that like the character's built into it, so we can kind of trust that relationship. Whereas you can't necessarily with companies.
It's something disconcerting about any time a company willfully disobeys a law, no matter how dumb they think it is.
That's fair enough. Hey, that's fair enough. I get you.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
And then, I mean, and it's... And I do get that there's a difference between asking who's being harmed by breaking this law, or potentially harmed, right?
Yeah.
And is it just yourself, or is it someone else?
Yeah.
And the CD one's an interesting example, because that is a dumb one, and I guess you're harming the CD industry, and you as an individual, not maybe, but in aggregate, it does.
Yeah.
Though if you're burning it for yourself, I don't know. Whereas the clear example is driving, right? Like,
yeah.
The reason for that law is because you could harm others.
So I was going to actually put this off, but I think if you don't mind, I'm going to bump this up a little bit because it totally plays in. But George Hotz, who is a guy that we've talked about, I like him too, but he started developing his own like self-driving car software earlier this year. He was using a bunch of like machine learning. It's like 20,000 lines of code.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bunch of training on his car.
Kind of like a genius slacker.
Yeah, exactly. And so he created a company, comma dot. It's comma dot something or other. Well, but last like 2 or 3 weeks ago, he announced he's done. He's not doing it anymore. Jimmy because Slacker. He got like, yeah, exactly. Because he got one letter from the National Highway, NHTSA, National Highway Transportation Security Agency. And it was like, yeah, they, could you not sell this stuff? Because it's completely unregulated and probably really dangerous. They were selling retrofit kits for $1,000 that would use...
I remember that. That was his whole thing. Like, it's super smart, it works well enough, and we can do it cheaper than all the others.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
Yeah, it turns out the comma.ai, that's the name of the company. So it turns out, I guess, so they're like working out of his house, and the California DMV... started showing up and knocking on their door and being like, what the heck are you guys doing? What is going on? You can't just do this. So it's like, it seemed like it came out of the blue after one letter. he just like he was shutting everything down. I guess it was kind of it had become a thing that the regulators weren't just like sending him emails. They were literally knocking on his door and saying,
wow,
yo, this is not cool. And so he decided to stop, but now he's come up with a clever workaround, because that's what he does. He's a bit of a hacker. He's
a bit of a genius.
Yeah, so he decided to just open source the software and,
boom,
and hardware.
We're not selling it.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, okay, you need to buy this phone. You need to buy this car. This is how you install it. He's like, it's all like all the hardware are 3D printed stuff. So you just like 3D print the models yourself, put the whole thing together, download our software.
Well, I figured out what I'm doing for my next year's project.
Right? And he's just like, put his hands in the air and he goes, NHTSA only regulates physical products that are sold, Hot said. They do not regulate open source software, which is a whole lot more like speech. If the U.S. government doesn't
this
like
makes
this project.
A fantastic movie.
I know.
That's just how it ends, right? And he just walks off.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
so brilliant.
Yeah, if the U.S. government doesn't like this product, I'm sure there are plenty of countries that will. And his whole thing was, they asked him, if it's for people who want to push the future forward, he said, when asked how or if Comma.ai plans to make any money off of the project, Hotz said, how does anybody make money? Our goal is to basically own the network. We want to own the network of self-driving cars that is out there. So, yeah, they'll just do the software support on the back end.
Wow, interesting. Okay, so he's not walking away. He's saying
he's open sourcing.
You have to install it yourself. Here's a DIY kit. And once you're up and running, join our network. And we'll go from there.
Yeah.
It's a software play. Wow.
Yeah.
See, now that, like, I can get behind that, right? That's a... wow. Well, I think I can. I'd have probably not if I thought too hard about it.
I didn't say, you know what's great about it?
Behind it
is I know. I like it. You know what my problem with it is every, like, really... everybody who's involved in the self-driving car game seems to be against him. And...
yeah, that should tell you something.
And, yeah, and it's one of those things where it's sort of like... it's sort of like VR right now, where a lot of these companies are going forward carefully, because even though they could do it cheaper, they're like, if you don't get above the minimum bar of quality, then you're going to ruin people on the experience, and nobody's you're going to ruin the entire market because people won't like
it. Tell it to some overseas manufacturers.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can only go so far. But the early companies are trying to come out the gate like at that level of quality, and they're doing the same thing with self-driving cars. Like,
for very obvious reasons.
You say, you will make it impossible to get these things on the road if they're dangerous when they first come out. They have to be above a certain minimum bar of safety, which is why Google is criticizing Tesla for moving too fast. And Tesla is criticizing George Hotz for moving too fast, which should really tell you how far down the road George Hotz's Comma.ia is when it comes to, you know, pursuing a shippable product over safety. So, it's... I don't know, but I at the same time, like you said, I like the creativity.
Well, that was the same excuse that Tesla used, right, for their self-driving cars. It's just a software update.
Yeah.
Like, that's all. It's just software.
Yeah, exactly.
That was their thing, too.
Yeah, wow. You were already letting us do this. We're just going a little bit further. What's the big deal? Yeah.
That's so fascinating. Oh, man. The poor regulators.
I know.
They're going up against super smart people is their issue.
Yeah, like the smartest of the smart. And the worst part is it's like this is their nightmare scenario, because for a lot of these regulators, they're all of a sudden they're going to be able to regulate cars to a level that they never were before by getting self-driving cars on the road. So there's a big, like, their whole thing is having safe, like, efficient transportation. That's what they're trying to get, like, going. That's what their job is to assure that. Yeah. Self-driving cars are the best way to accomplish that. They've bought into that idea. And the self-driving car companies are like totally taking advantage of the fact that they've given them a window. Like, yes. And
yeah, I could see though where they would be frustrated with them if this spurs on a new set of regulation.
Yeah.
That now everyone will have to jump through because George was kind of,
yeah, quick on the gun. Yeah, it turns out this is we don't even have an article for this, but Apple turns out sent a letter to the regulators specifically about like self-driving cars and stuff, and we're like, yeah, we agree with companies on like these points, like this is how self-driving, like this is how we think the relationship between.
Was that a recent letter or one that like has just become public?
Wasn't
clear to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because if they sent it back in July, you're like, yeah, well, that was before they shut everything down.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and we all kind of knew that they were working on something. So, well, the only thing is they say that what they're working on is a software. They didn't shut the Titan stuff down. They just shut down. It's obviously they're not making a car, but they still are working on software. Yeah. Yeah, none of this is surprising. If you've been listening to this show. So, yeah, it's good times. Go break the laws, guys. I think that's the lessons you can
just
take.
Feel bad
from
about
here.
It when you do it, okay?
Exactly.
Think of me. Don't think of me at all. All right. Speaking of things that are not surprising.
Okay, tell me.
Pebble.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Pebble?
I do remember Pebble.
It was a watch. My first. Love, my first smartwatch.
See, it was the Oculus Rift of
display
smartwatches.
I could set a timer. I could look at my calendar. It could tell me the time. I could make my own watch faces and select from other third-party watch faces.
Yeah,
I have up to 8 apps.
Whoa, that is so many applications. Yeah,
the same amount of memory on my watch. I could see text messages. I could not dismiss or reply. It had a light if I flicked my wrist, which I got into the habit of doing all the time. Even when I wasn't wearing it, my poor other watches would get flicked around. Yeah, so they had, I got the Kickstarter, the original, the awesome, that had BLE in it. That was what got me. Remember, I was like, oh, I'd get one if it had BLE. And then, like, 2 days later, they're like, and writing BLE. And I went,
yeah.
I guess I'm getting one.
I mean,
I would. I'm a man of my word. And so, anyways, they then like doubled down. They figured out how to put color on the screen. They came up with some steel versions. They came up with a round version, and they had different watch bands. And they're now sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're being bought by Fitbit. And stop me if this doesn't feel kind of like the Sears Kmart merger.
Yeah, it's got a bit of that feeling going on.
So they were saying, so smartwatch consolidation is happening. So like they're like the only two independent ones. So okay, I guess there's probably some other tiny teensy ones out there, I guess. But anyways, Fitbit is buying Pebble for about $40 million.
Yeah.
Citizen was interested in purchasing Pebble in 2015 for $740 million.
That won't keep you up at night.
Intel made an offer for $70 million.
Heck, that won't keep you up at night either. Jeez.
Yeah, it's a bummer. They laid off 25% of their staff in March, which we noted, and that was part of the like. Because I had someone ask me, well, why not get the Pebble again? I was like, well, okay, a couple things. But one of the reasons was, I went, writing's on the wall. They're letting off people. At this stage in the game, it's not good.
Right.
Obviously, Apple Watch, Android Wear kind of took a bite out of it. Though they're saying like the entire smartwatch sales market is tanking now that the initial interest has waned.
Well, yeah.
Oh, by the way, Fitbit, they priced their shares at $50 when they IPO'd. Today they're trading around $9.
So whoa.
That's where, again, they're like, well, you know. The intent, though, is to... It's one of those like resource acquisitions. So eventually the Pebble brand and the watches themselves and presumably the support is going to be going away. Goodbye, Pebble.
Yep. And that was that. That's all she wrote.
Man. It's hard. It's hard it to be hard. A hardware company out there.
Hardware startups are tough.
Their screens, their color screens, the ability to last an entire week was pretty darn awesome. My guess is that's what Pebble was, or Fitbit was interested in.
Yeah, I believe it. Guess. Yeah, because that's one of their big things. What's one of the big differentiators between Fitbit and Apple right now is that their Fitbit still is a multi-day battery, whereas the Apple Watch is, they only advertise it as a single-day battery. A lot of people get more than that.
I get 2 days out of mine.
Yeah. I charge mine every day. I have to, but I have a Series 1 original, so, you know.
Pretty old, too, yeah.
Yeah, it gets... Mine's never lasted more than a day, though. Like, or more than... Mine's never lasted 2 days.
Wow.
From the day that I bought it, it'll go a day and a half. If I wake up at 8 a.m. and I turn it off when I go to bed, and I turn it back on when I wake up, I'll make it till noon, but... It won't make it past then.
Let's see. It's 9 p.m. I'm at 76%.
Oh, man. When did you turn yours on?
What do you mean turn it on? Like take it off the charger?
Yeah.
6 o'clock this morning.
Okay. I took mine off the charger at 8:30. I'm at 41%.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do need to charge it.
Yeah, I charge mine every day.
Yeah, no, mine... I don't know. I just don't... Yeah, 76%. So I probably won't charge it tonight. I'll end tomorrow in the 30-25% range.
Oh, man.
So I'm losing about 25%. I'm losing 25 to 30% a day.
If anybody's listening who's going to buy a Kirby Christmas presents, turns out I need a new ceramic watch, guys. Series 2.
Anyways, so that's one purchase happening. Another one. Is we don't talk about these guys very much, but
they're out there.
I should. AngelList is acquiring Product Hunt.
Ooh, which one's Product Hunt?
Yeah, right. which, by the way, side note. I know we've talked about like those smart ads that follow you around everywhere, and I had Brooklinen like going for tons of time. Well, it looks like they've been outbid by Tough Mudder, which, like, guys, I already bought my tickets from you. Like, don't worry.
Yeah, I know. You can chill out now. Jeez.
You don't have to send me ads now trying to get me to sign up for Tough Mudder. Done.
I know.
I'm in. Anyways, so still working on it. I must have visited the Toyota site at one time. I'm getting a bunch of Prius ads. And, like, I own a Prius. Like, again... Deal done. Like, leave me alone.
Which, they want to make sure you continue to buy one.
Here's what happened. I think this is what happened. I read an article about a guy who installed solar panels on his house, and so he actually rented, I'm guessing, or borrowed, however it works, 3 cars. I don't know. Is he an influencer? got 3 cars, electric EV cars. That's redundant, right? E cars? Anyways,
EV cars. I don't know
what to call them. Electric vehicles?
Yes.
Yeah. I got 3 of them and was like, could I drive around town with them? And he got like the cheapest of the cheapest, got a mid-sized one, and then got the best one. And ultimately was like, yeah, for everyday city driving, honestly, any of them work. One of them was like a golf cart, essentially. That's what it was. It was like a golf cart that could only go 25 miles an hour, was only allowed on roads that went up to 35 miles an hour. The other one was the cheapest car you can buy, and then you got the, again, Tesla. But anyways, dude, I think I want an electric vehicle for my next car, because we're totally going to get solar on our house the next when we redo our roof in the next couple years. And because he was like doing the math, and he's like, look, saving on your utility bills, like that's good and all, but if you get an electric vehicle, and he's going on the assumption like you're going to buy a car anyways. It's like, yeah. And you have your, it's just your in-town car, and you got your other one to do whatever you're going to do with, like, the bigger stuff. He's like, it's amazing. And he's like, and your house can power it. It's like, it's free. Anyways, super cool.
Well, not to mention the fact that if you buy a Tesla, James, so all you got to do is go and buy a Tesla, is it'll pay for itself because it's got, like, the, you'll be able to just set it up on the Tesla network. It'll go and give rides. And
yeah. But he was like, even without that, he was like, just in his utilities, his payback time period was a little over 7 years. He's like, with the car thrown into there, he's like, my payback period is like 3 years. He's like, it's ridiculous. He's like, why wouldn't you do this?
Yeah,
that's a great question. Anyways, I got distracted by an ad of all things. All right, here we go. That's what I get for using my iPad to go through it instead of using Safari on my computer. I wouldn't have this problem if I just used my computer. Angel List, they're...
I was trying to figure out what that had to do with Angel's List.
Nothing at all, other than the ad is on the articles page.
Gotcha.
They're a community of startups and investors, essentially, connecting investors with money startups with money, and also giving them the tools to like have those conversations and to get started, essentially. Let's see here. It says here, just fun fact, approximately 275 startups and 417 investors have raised money and invested via AngelList. So, you know.
You know what, James? That fact was fun.
I know. So anyways, they bought Product Hunt, which is another community where people can vote and comment on up-and-coming products. Oh. It's like Kickstarter, but without any money.
Yeah, hey, they got a podcast thing.
Sure they do. Should we not talk about it as a result? Anyways, what was interesting is they said that...
No, I want to get on it, James.
Oh. They're like competitors or something.
No.
Yeah, so anyways, yeah, they've got their, they do that, they do all sorts of stuff, but it's really this ranking stuff, and sometimes when you see, like, new startups, you see their Product Hunt page. Mm. Funny, though, when the CEOs of the two companies first met each other, they were both, like, super concerned, because they were like, do you know how easy it is for one of us to do the other's thing? Like, it was a natural extension for AngelList to get into helping product development for product development to say, let's talk about you getting angel investing to take this to the next level. And so they were like, yeah, at first we were like super nervous near each other and didn't want to say anything. But then eventually like we became friends and it was good. And we decided, you know, the best thing to do here is to combine forces and
you know, that's, we
both get to do it.
That's an amazing application of game theory right there, where it's like,
right?
Yeah, the natural direction for it to go would be to be both companies to realize that, hey, this is a natural extension, compete against each other, and eventually demolish each other through competition. But if you're willing to communicate and cooperate, you can best that. And that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty fun. So congrats to the two of them. It sounds like a pretty good match. The Product Hunt guys did say it was kind of fun that they are wholly what is it when you don't have an office together? It's not outsourced. When you're just dispersed. I don't remember. Oh, remote. That's it. They're 100% remote workers, but we don't want to be. Like, they just had some sort of snafu with an office lease. So like, we really want an office, and it turns out AngelList has an office. So and it's all in the same city. That's like this is perfect.
Where is AngelList based out of?
San Francisco.
Of course.
Yeah.
Come on. Who was I talking to?
Come on.
Was it with you?
What a doubt.
You're going to have to remind me. We might have talked about this on the show, but I was talking about somebody who does, It's a VC. You know what it was last week, and it was you, and it was on the show talking about VCs who raise money, like who like come to Andreessen, and they're like, we want to raise a bunch of money for this amazing platform that allows people to communicate and build a company, mm-hmm. Build a company up, and they
enable remote asynchronous communication across yeah. the world, work anywhere.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll be based in San Francisco. Yes. And everyone will have to. Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's funny. It's one of those weird, I kind of actually, there's a certain justification for that, but it's funny that Andreessen's like, yeah, no, that's, at this point, you gotta use your own product, guys. you gotta be that far along. That's funny.
Yeah, pretty funny. But anyways, I thought that was pretty cool. Do you want to keep going, or do you want to insert one?
Okay, so let me
this one anymore.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, this actually is a good one. So Amazon made a bunch of
the other ones.
because I'm just
this one's actually pretty good. Let's do this one.
This is good for pacing. So
all of mine are good for the record, worth waiting around for.
Oh yeah, well. So Amazon had a big conference this week where they talked about stuff that they're building for the Amazon Web Services, they announced a bunch of cool stuff that's really cool if you're into that sort of thing, and really boring if you're not into that sort of thing. But a couple of them actually had to do with that I thought were interesting and worth bringing up. Number one, they have announced that they've got a suite of, or not a suite, they've got a server rack full of field programmable gate arrays, which is this reoccurring topic of conversation, which are these it's literally hardware based. They're programmable chips. You can do hardware acceleration in the field. And the reason why this is a big deal, this is something that Microsoft decided to really invest heavily in while they were doing their Azure suite for their own tech. So they're doing hardware-accelerated machine learning using field programmable gate arrays, and they're having a ton of success doing that. Both Facebook and Google have pursued a course where they're actually building chips. They're not using these FPGAs. Well, for Amazon, it doesn't make sense to do that. If they're going to get into this game, this is going to be hardware accelerated stuff on the back end in servers is going to be huge business in the future. But it only makes sense for companies like Google and Facebook to do that at scale with actual sililicon. So this is how Amazon's getting into it. So this is going to become a bigger and bigger and bigger thing. And everybody's all of a sudden sitting around thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to have to learn how to do this because it's not easy, turns out.
Yeah.
It's a highly specialized skill that pretty much only guys that were design engineers working at Intel have any idea how to really do this. So all of a sudden it's being opened up to the masses. Anybody can build these sorts of things. So, and it's kind of it's a big deal. It's cool. It's interesting. But the other thing that they're doing, and this is great, they're expanding their cold storage system. So this is if you're using the Amazon Web Services, you can do long-term different forms of storage, temporary easy to access storage. You can do, they have different sorts of buckets for streaming large amounts of data, but there's a sort of, that's what we do. So there's
it costs us money. You want to know how much it cost us last month?
Yes.
89 cents.
Oh, that's not bad.
I love AWS.
I know. Yeah, it's great unless you mess up, and then it's amazing how expensive it can become.
Or become successful.
Is that what and you quickly. No. No, just spin up an instance and let it run for a month and have nobody ever use it. that'll only cost you $100.
Is that a thing?
Yeah. And it's just like, it just being there is expensive. If anybody accidentally uses it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's why people like empty their bank accounts when they're doing a startup, and all of a sudden they hit a little bit of success and they don't have any money. And it's like, that's why people give away half their company for angel investors, because they're like, all of a sudden they realize Amazon is coming to them, knocking on the door saying, hey, we need $30,000 for the two instances that you spun up last month. And they're like, I have $5,000 in my bank account. What am I supposed to do here? Fire sale. But at that point, you have a product usually that you can raise money for. So it's a, you know, yeah, yeah, win some, lose some. But yeah, so the other, so one of the big things that they're getting into is they want to do cold storage for companies. So let's say you've got like terabytes and terabytes of data, and you don't want to go out and you got, you know, yeah, you got 1,000 terabytes of data, yeah, and you want it stored somewhere off site because
safety.
Yeah, it's only really, things are only really stored and safe if they're you got to back up
two
somewhere
places at once. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And so they're like, there exists this problem for certain types of companies. Like, let's say you're a Genentech and you've got local stores of all of your what's that really dumb program that I hate?
Genome.
No, not genome. It's an MRP program, a material resource planning program. I can't remember what it's called all of a sudden. But anyways, let's say you've got a bunch of, like, you're a large company and you host your own, like, material, you know, your own stuff. If you want to get off of that, you're going to have to back up all that data to the cloud, and that becomes, and you don't want to store it. Yeah. It becomes a very, like, it becomes a difficult thing.
We'll be
and
done
it's
uploading in 10 years.
Yeah, literally. I mean, that's the problem, is that they're talking about how, like, Amazon, to load your data, over 10 gig or to load your data over 10 gigabyte per second Ethernet, where is it? They came up with this. Amazon says you could ship 1 exabyte of data to AWS in about 6 months, a feat which would take roughly 26 years over a 10 gigabyte per second dedicated connection. And a 10 gigabyte per second dedicated connection's pretty big. Wow. And so basically what they're doing is they literally have a semi with like a trailer on the back end.
Classic.
That has hard drives and servers.
That's probably halfway economical too.
Oh yeah, it's
not
super economical. Yeah, and they like back it up to your company. Like, they park at your company, plug it into your hard drives, and download all your data, and then they drive it to their server farms to store it in long-term storage.
That's amazing.
As the old quote goes, never doubt the bandwidth of a van full of hard drives. So,
dude, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun to be a big company. You get to do crazy things like that.
Yeah, well, and it's great because it's like, this is one of those ones where it's like, there's the internet will never, like, I actually, it's funny, I used to argue. When I was younger, dumber, engineer.
Yeah, you did.
And I didn't really understand the numbers of this sort of thing, where it's like, you will actually never be able to catch up with the bandwidth of this sort of a thing. The idea is like, the internet, what's so amazing about the internet is the cross-section of bandwidth versus ping. So it's the rate at which you respond and the rate at which information is sent. So you make a request across the country and it sends you that request less than a second later at a pretty good download. But the truth is, if you don't need that request to happen a second later, it will always be faster to send a large file on a data stick and just mail it. You know, or like, especially like if you're talking about a terabyte, let's say you want to like share a terabyte of information with your buddy in New York. Like, you can either drop your terabyte hard drive in the mail and it'll be there tomorrow, or you can upload it and it will almost be faster to do one hard drive. Now let's talk, 40 terabytes of data. Or yeah, in their case, it scales
really well.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Or
it literally takes the same amount of time to drive a single byte as it does to drive a truck full of bytes.
Yeah. Or in this case, they're talking about petabytes, which are 1,000 terabytes, or exabytes, which are 1,000 petabytes. So a million terabytes. Yeah. It's all of a sudden. Yeah, exactly. One byte being as fast as an exabyte is pretty awesome. For those of you not following, a gigabyte is a billion bytes. A terabyte is a trillion bytes. So an exabyte, we have now gotten into, I don't know the name of these. I think we might be into the Google bytes.
Crazy. It's a lot. That's insane. Cool. Amazon. I love it.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
All right. I don't know if you know this, but...
I probably know.
In 1987, Nintendo came out... No. That's not right. Well, we're going to say it anyways. Nintendo had one created... I don't know how to say it. Nintendo had a game... We'll say it that way. Okay. That has become the most coveted game ever.
Okay.
Okay?
Battletoads. That's my guess.
Do you know, on our Nintendo, what came in the box when we bought our NES system, which I think was like an 89, it came in a big box.
Yeah, big box. I remember the box being enormous.
It had the system. It had, I think, one controller, maybe two. It had a gun, and it had a power pad.
I do remember the power pad.
Oh, which, if you don't know it, I'm sorry. You should know it. It's awesome.
It's weird. I was three, and I actually remember this stuff.
Dude, it was amazing. Like, that was a seminal moment in our lives. So anyways, this power pad, it's got... What is it? 1, 2, 3... It's got 12 dots on it.
Yes.
And so the idea is, I don't remember why, but anyways, you would press the dots, and usually with your feet is how it's supposed to work to simulate an AB
controller. Yeah, it's like a four by four.
You literally could just plug your controller in and just tap A and B, and it would work. But anyways,
it was a four by four mat.
Was it a 4x4? I thought it was a 3x4. But maybe
it might have been, but I don't know the exact size, but it's a mat that you stand on that has printed on it the location of little buttons that you could step on. You could run on it and it would simulate a character running augmented reality, James.
Just type in power pad if you don't know what we're talking about. There's a ton of pictures on it. There's a gray side and then like a graph paper side. No idea what the graph paper side is for. Only ever used the gray side. In that box came an game, and it was a tri-pack, if you remember. It had Super Mario Bros. A great one. It had Duck Hunt.
Yeah.
And then it had a third one, like the Olympics game, which is what you would use the power pad for, which had you could race someone, this 100-meter dash. You could do hurdles. It had long jump, triple jump. I feel like there was another one, but I can't think of it right now. That literally could be it. And I think the last one was just like, do all of them. So anyways, you could add up to like 8 players and all do your races and rotate. It was great. That is not that game. That is the most popular one.
Oh, it should be.
But its predecessor, actually. Before Nintendo bought it, there was a third-party company, Bandai, that created a game called Stadium Events.
Ooh.
That is literally that game, is literally that power pad, but Nintendo decided to change the name. slap on our new label and put the Nintendo branding onto that thing and call it a power pad.
Wow.
But for whatever reason, Nintendo saw it and went, "You're right. This is awesome. We need to get in on this."
It is the exact same. I'm looking at screenshots of the game, and I'm like, "Yeah, that's the same game."
Yeah. They didn't change anything. They literally didn't change anything. Just the outside of it. Which, hey, it's a super fun game.
Yeah.
Hey, though the comments, which I think are true, is like, it gets hard really fast.
Really fast. Yeah. This
part of it. Like, you get tired doing all the races. Remember, we used to have to trade back and forth because one of the modes was, like, try to beat as many, like, you'd start off with, like, the first guy was, like, Turtle or something like that, and then it was, like, Horse and whatever. I think we only got to, like, maybe five deep. But you would do the 100 meter. I think you would do the hurdles, too. And you would just, like, and every time, like, good job, next. Good job, next. Good job, next.
Yeah, that's right.
There was no break whatsoever. Oh my gosh, if you ever want to get a great workout, that was how you did it. He would just be a
sweaty
mess.
Yeah, there was no, like, because it's all power pad, like, you didn't have a game pad to hit A and B on. So they would literally, like, you'd cross the finish line, you'd put your hands up in the air, and then all of a sudden the screen would flash and they'd be down in, like, the go position. And they do it, and they, like, they'd stand up, and then the gun would fire, and they'd start running again. And you'd be like, start running.
Yeah, that was an intense game. I do love the, I played against Jesse recently, because we got it all hooked up again.
That's awesome.
She's pregnant, okay? We're going to give her a little bit of a pass. But not very good. She's like, she tried to, like, run for reels, you know, not realizing it's like, no, you just, like, feet up and down as fast as you can, like, actually simulate running. And she watched me do it and was like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, nothing, I'm winning, watch. Yeah. and then we did a long jump, you know, and to which she was running, like, you know, getting like 7 meters or something. I'm like, dude, what a noob. So the first couple, I did it for reels, you know, getting like 9-10 meters. And then the last one, when she, like, she faulted and she's like, oh, gosh, I was like, here, because I kind of already won. I was like, here, let me show you how you get really far. And so took off on the run, jumped off the pad, let him keep flying.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But you can't just stay off forever. You got to get back on the pad eventually. And
get the timing right.
Yeah, and then got back on, you know, got like whatever it was, something like 16 meters. She was like, what? That's cheating. I'm like, I know. That's why I didn't do it until I knew I had the win. But so I didn't feel bad about it. But anyways, enough reminiscing. Super fun game. Highly recommend it. It's good. But this original game here, the Stadium Events, for whatever reason, this company came out with it, didn't produce very many of them before Nintendo bought them and relabeled everything. So it became a little bit of a scarce commodity. And there are Nintendo game collectors out there.
Yeah.
Which doesn't surprise me that much, knowing people and gamers in general.
Yeah.
Who literally have, like, cases of stuff. But this is a game that... by the way, there's like about 750 total NES games. It's insane. It kind of starts off with this couple who they find. This lady, she finds one sitting at like a pawn shop for $8. Like, perfect brand new package.
What?
Yeah. No, and she's like, are you kidding me? Like, she calmly walks out of the store, goes to her car, does some search online, and goes, yes, that's the one. Calmly walks back in, buys it for $8, doesn't say anything, tries to act all chillax and chill, and then takes off.
Yeah.
She took it to, like, a GameStop, some sort of gamer store, and the guy literally offered her, he's like, the entire cash register full of money for the game. She turned around.
Yeah.
And she's like, huh, I guess I am onto something here.
That's really funny.
Pretty.
The guy's just like, I'll figure out how to refill the cash register later.
Yeah, not a problem. My boss will be okay with this type of thing. I'm trying to remember down at the bottom. Somewhere in here it actually gives me the number. I should have looked it up ahead of time. Yeah, there we go. She ended up selling it for $25,000. To a dentist who already owned two copies.
Oh my gosh.
But was upset because they were not in pristine condition. Now, thankfully, he and his wife was into it as well. it says here, his hands, normally steady in his trade, turned clammy and uncertain. It was maybe the most beautiful copy of stadium events that Todd had ever found. There was no way he could let it go. A pristine copy of the game, complete with its manual, the cellophane still attached to the box.
Stood
up, paced, sat back down, a wreck. His wife was standing behind him yelling, "Buy it! Buy it!" He typed the bid in at the last second, $25,000, an admittedly outrageous amount of money. There was a delay. Finally, the words popped up. Todd was the winner. He jumped out of his chair toward his wife, and they fell into each other and danced.
That's the down payment on a house.
Which is what he used the money for. Yep, paid off some loans, down payment on a house, bought a couple other things, and they're like, this game was a life changer. It's pretty awesome.
Oh my gosh. Oh, jeez.
Oh, apparently there's some old dude. His name is Tim. He was like on a cleaning crew for an old factory or a warehouse or something like that, and he saw a pallet of these games and was like, huh, that's interesting. And decided to keep them just for the fun of it because he liked the game, thought games were cool. He eventually turned into a big Nintendo gamer. Wasn't at the time. Yeah, it turns out he's sitting on a few million dollars worth of these games. He goes, yeah, I just kind of sell them, dole them out when I need the cash, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
That's how he lives, selling that game. Stadium events. Oh, and again, everyone's like, it's not like it's an amazing game.
Yeah, it's really not.
Some of the game mechanics aren't that great, but it's a rare commodity. It's a rare commodity.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, and that's the really important note here is that it's not a good game. Like, I wouldn't, you know, if I was hanging out at your place and you said, "Hey, want to play Stadium Event?" I'd be like, "No."
Might say, well, for nostalgic reasons, you'd probably say.
Yeah, we're going to say. Well, yeah. I would say.
I played it with Jessie. Again, she's pregnant and not into competing. So, you know, which for obvious reasons. But after a while, you're like, all right, this is cool, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Let's play something different.
The thing is,
it's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Well, that's the nice
thing. That's a good game.
That's the funny part about the Nintendo is it's like there are a lot of games on the Nintendo that are still great games. Like, they're fun. I download versions. I bought Mega Man 6 for my PlayStation 4, which is the Mega Man that we played on the Nintendo. I mean, like, there are still good games that, like, are worth playing. That is not one of them. I would not buy that for my PlayStation 4.
Oh, no, man. Snap on that virtual helmet.
Okay.
That would make you sick.
I was going to say.
If you could get it to not rattle, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, dude, that's amazing is what it is.
It is really awesome. Oh, man, that is really awesome. I like that. I like that a lot. So this is a neck-breaking turn, but I'm just gonna go for it.
It happens.
Speaking of speed, James, speed is really important sometimes, not just when you're playing video games, but also when you're making apps. So there's a new classification coming out for memory cards and how memory cards work. So the basic idea is that memory cards are obviously cards used for memory. And
really? Not trucks, just little cards.
Exactly. When they were originally designed, the intention was exactly, you know, you take a photo and it would load it to the thing, and you could then pop it in your computer and download it. And that's what it was used for. Over the years, that has evolved a little bit, and it's not quite the same anymore. So basically what's going on is there's two types of memory in your computer. There's your RAM and there's your hard drive space. And your RAM is very, very expensive. And it's really, 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 really fast. And then you've got your long-term memory. Well, Apple has really been the master of this particular setup, where they use a type of technology called a swap, where they effectively say, hey, we're going to give you X amount of RAM. On your iPhone, it's 2 gigs. On your computer, it's 16 gigs. And once you fill up a good portion of that, what they do is they take, like, let's say you have 12 gig, let's say you have your computer, it's 16 gigs of RAM on it. And then you open up a bunch of apps and stuff, and you have, you get up to 12 gigs. Well, you're starting to run out of space a little bit. So what they're doing is in order to do that, you're going to have different things going on. You'll have a bunch of Chrome tabs open. You'll be editing video. You'll have your audio playing. You'll have things that you're not doing all at the same time. And if you have really, really fast long-term memory, you can literally take a chunk of your RAM. We'll just take 4 gigs of it. And we'll put it on the hard drive and free that space up back on the RAM for the most important tasks. And that can really make stuff, like, if you've ever had that experience where you'll click on a tab and your computer will just hang for a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, well, it seems like it's remembering what it was doing on that thing. That's literally what it's doing. It's reaching into the hard drive and saying, oh, I need that chunk of RAM back. Reloading it into RAM and then going. On the iPhone, you never get that experience, really. And one of the big reasons for that is because the swap that they use is in the hard drive is so incredibly fast that you almost don't notice that it's happening. And anywhere where they're using like flash memory and they're using solid-state drives, they can really minimize how much RAM's necessary and expand the size of your applications. In the classic example here is when people like edit 4K video. In order to edit 4K video, it takes a lot more. Oftentimes, it takes a lot more than 16 gigs of RAM to do it. But if you have a bunch of solid state drives, you don't even notice as you scrub along the video, because it's all pulling in and out of swap so fast. Okay, so this is the foundational technology. The problem that they're running into on Android phones is that a lot of the manufacturers are saying they have a very small amount of onboard memory. Well, 32 gigs, 64 gigs, whatever.
Yeah.
And which is that super fast hard drive space that's great for swap. But application developers are building these hard drives or building apps that require a lot more than the RAM on board that they can have access to, and even more than really what like the core or hard drive space can be used. And so what they're doing is they're basically saying, look, we want to be able to use the memory cards for swap, but it's just not fast enough. Cheaper brands are just not fast enough. So this is where it all comes from. This is where the idea comes from. They're starting a new classification system. So when you go and buy a memory card, you can look at how much a memory RAM, you know, how much memory it has. Oh, it's got 250 gigabytes. But it will also have an A1 performance or app performance. And this is your like your top classification. App performance class A1 cards require sustained sequential performance of 10 megabytes a second, as well as 1500 random reads, input output operations per second, and 500 random writes, in input outputs per second. That's a sequential performance requirement. Isn't too demanding. It's the additional regulation of IOPS performance that matters, something that's become necessary as SD cards have evolved from pure file storage format to flash memory that's often used to run applications. So yeah, basically what they're saying is like, it's the, you got to be able to do, not only, so the sequential writes are basically saying you have a giant, you have a giant file. You want to be able to load it into RAM as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. The 1500 reads and the 500 writes, that's all about swap and using swap to run applications, and leveraging what the RAM can do. So yeah, this will allow companies like Google with their Android and all of these different guys to do is to really rely on this memory and develop even faster, larger applications that perform really well. So
cool.
It's a cool development. It's neat. At the same time, Apple is getting rid of their card readers. The cards are evolving to be even more useful. Which is, honestly, this is what's interesting about this is the actual reason why Apple doesn't allow, this is their logic. Not only does it allow them to pad their budget, but it allowed them to design a phone that performed better than any other Android phone with less RAM, because they didn't have to deal with card readers and the difficulty that card readers come with. You know, and a lot of conspiracy theorists will come along and say, there's no good engineering reason for why they would do this. But this specifically is the reason why you get great performance out of iPhones, and Android phones like struggle, even though they have way more RAM and then there's all these different options. It's the reason why Samsung has gone away from building card readers into their phones and stuff, because that's how you get super high performance. And this will effectively allow higher performance to come at cheaper prices to your low-end Android phones, which is great for developing markets where they can't afford your Galaxy Notes 7 and your Google Nexus's 7 and your Apple iPhones.
Google Pixels.
7. Oh, yeah, Pixels. Pixels 1.
That's right, dude. Come on. Nexus is so last year.
Yeah, but it allowed me to say Nexus 7, which kind of kept the whole.
I gotcha. Huh, cool. Interesting. Yeah. I like that.
I thought so.
Very cool. Well, you know what also helps things go faster and connect better?
Tell me.
Ift.
Ift.
Rhymes with gift, apparently. If this and that.
IFTTT.
That's how you pronounce it. Ift. I didn't know that until like today. It's like, huh.
I didn't know people pronounced it. I just called it if this and that.
What? IFTTT. Ift. So anyways, there's this cool article that's written about them, because they're changing how they make money, if you will. So it used to be, still is totally, it's free product for like people like you and me to use. You essentially, if you haven't ever used it, again, like, what are you doing? But anyways,
how could you have been listening to this us for this long and not have used this and that?
Yeah, it's awesome. You can essentially say, if this happens, then do this.
Yeah.
Crazy. So you might have something like, for me, whenever I share an Instagram photo, it automatically posts the photo to Twitter. And not just a link to it. Come on, noobs, don't do that. Which is, if you just tap if you check the little Twitter box, that's what it does. Just gives you a link. Because they don't allow embedding anymore. because they hate Twitter for some reason. Don't do that. Use Ift to have it post the actual picture embedded into it, plus a link. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's what I do. And that's an example. You could have other ones, too. Some actually really cool ones that they were talking about. Kind of makes me want to get a Philips Hue, I'll be honest. Because they work with them. Where you could have it. Think about this. Think about it, Matthew, because you have one. Whenever your favorite sports team scores a goal, have it quickly change the lights to their color.
Oh.
Right? Right? I was like, oh, dude, that's brilliant. That's a great idea. Just a little subtle, oh, yeah, cool, we just scored.
I had an if this and that at some point with my Philip Hughes, and I can't remember what it was, but it was like anytime somebody tweeted, so like I could basically get, it was like a flashing notification anytime like people that I followed tweeted something, which became real annoying. Real fast.
Yeah, that's why I like the sports one. You know, I'm like, you know, it's when a game's on, it's on.
My problem is going to be the blue and gold flashing for basketball scoring's too fast. Yeah. Oh, what's going on?
Right. Oh, that would just be... Oh, man. Yeah. Anyways, or have it be like for football, just like 7 flashes or like 3 flashes or something. I don't know if you can specify that. I think it's just like a score happens. Depends. I don't know, actually. I have to look it up. But little things like that where I'm like, dude, that's awesome. One where if someone pushes your doorbell, it flashes your lights for you as well. So you get the audio plus the visual cue. There was another light one. Actually, the one I saw was it's the Eve Elgato where they have door sensors. And they're like, you know, you could put one on your fridge. So if you open your fridge up in the middle of the night, it could put on like a night light, like a red or blue light for you. So you can see, like, I need it before I get to the fridge, not right after, but okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, anyways, just kind of cool. So I want to share those couple recipes out there because I thought they were super awesome ideas. I'm like, man, I want one. Lutron does not play with them yet, so not an option. But they could in the future because they're changing the way they make money. They are now charging different developers to have available recipes. And one of the cool parts about it is it's not just going to be one thing. Like, I don't know if you know this, but if you, let's say you had, you took a photo, right? And you wanted it to not only tweet it out, maybe you wanted to also post it to Facebook, and then you also wanted to save a copy in Dropbox, or maybe send it as an email to your friend. You know, I don't know. you had to set up individual recipes for each of those.
Right.
Which you do. It wasn't, you know, it was a thing. And then it would, now they're trying to set it up so it's like, no, just like, just keep it all in one. Keep it easy. Don't have to play that game. The other issue is that if you have multiple accounts, you have to have multiple IFT accounts to make it all work. So like Twitter is an example where it only supports one. There will be ways to change that going forward.
Nice.
Yeah, so they are currently not a sustainable business because they don't charge anything. But this is one of the ways that they're going to do it. And so hopefully you and I don't get... we'll continue to be able to use it for free, but they're going to set it up so that different companies, like Philips Hue, actually one of them that they were talking about, where it's like, it's one of those where it wasn't a crazy number that they threw out. It was like, I want to say like $300 a month or something like that. That doesn't sound like nearly enough if you're just going for all of your developers to pay into it, though they have a few hundred people, but or developer potential companies that have apps or little recipes to go with them.
Right.
I'll find the number quickly. Oh well. But anyways, yeah. So that's their idea, is they're kind of switching the model to become independent. Or not independent, but to become sustainable, to stay independent, is the idea. They really see themselves as like the duct tape of the internet, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah, every time I learn about creative stuff that they do, I'm like, oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's funny. If This and That is always one of those companies where I'll read a story about them. I'm like, oh, that seems cool. And then I'm like, but I'm just not sure I'll use that.
Their big problem is they're primarily super users, use their stuff. And they struggle with how do you keep it so it is this recipe, literally allow for super creative things versus make it more open to just normal everyday people. So one of the things they are using now is in the Philips app, you can just access If This Then That from the app. You don't actually have to. Wait, does that sound true? I don't know. You have the app.
I don't know.
That's true. But the idea is it's kind of like an API type of thing where it's just embedded in the app. And so you can set up all sorts of recipes that way, trying to make it a little more accessible to users.
Apps we even like. Let's see here. I'm pretty sure it'll come up in this list of it's funny because it's one of those things where it's actually that's one of my biggest complaints of the Philips Hue is sort of how do you manage a bunch of different users at the same time? I want the lights to turn. If I turn a light off and the difficult one for me is somebody wants to go to bed and they, my roommates, they live together. One of them comes home later than the other. How do you get it so that it's geographically based where if one person comes home and the other person's not there, the lights turn on automatically. But if one person's already there and the other one comes, it just stays with whatever state it's in. Because if the other ones, they got weird schedules. If one's already asleep, then, you don't want the lights kicking on, sort of thing. Has always seemed one of those pretty good bridges for sort of creating really complicated recipes for the Philips Hue. If this thing is going on and this thing is going on and that thing's going on, then have these lights turn on in this location. But my problem has been I don't think my roommates could handle that.
It would be you have to set it up. Somehow you're setting. That's the weird part. One of the things that Lyft or Ift can do is you can create a recipe and then share it with others. And so all they gotta do is they can use it. And the weird one about that, and this is where they get into trouble, is you have to set up a series of gates in order to make those if-then statements work.
Right.
Right? So it's okay, if you want to turn the lights on, it means I'm home, but you're not.
Right.
Right. And so you have to first get through that if, and then you say, if that's true, okay, now turn on the lights.
Right. Which the engineer in me is I could write an app that would do that. I feel I could create a third-party app that accesses the Hue lamps. I feel it'd be easier for me to just build my own custom software to do that. It ends up just being I don't get more lamp, I don't get more lights, and I don't use it if this and that. I just you know what, my room's good enough. That's fine. I'll stick with that. I don't know. It's one of those. Yeah, they're an interesting service. They always seem they're right on the edge of something really awesome and useful. Yeah. And they're just not quite there. And it's funny because you know what I really want it to be? I want it to be not a recipe writer. I don't want it to be a recipe executor. I want it to be an automatic recipe writer. I want it to give me really, really cool recipes where I can kind of give it a general, yeah, this is sort of what I want it to do. And it will just be okay, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm.
That simple interface, which is,
right,
they say is difficult to do.
Yeah, give me some machine learning, guys. You want a simple interface
to do complicated things, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Give me some machine learning, stuff like that. Just artificially intelligent, if this then that statements. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so but they're going to stay around a while, so
yeah,
hopefully they'll make it happen.
They'll figure it out. They're the future.
Yeah.
So I got a couple of stories I want to run through super quickly. So this is we're revisiting the smartwatch. You mentioned earlier that consolidation's happening and the market's slowing down. Well, Motorola, who has been bought by Lenovo, so they're now Lenovo Moto, they announced that they're not going to be making any more Moto 360s. They're done. They're getting out of the smartwatch business.
Wow.
And the Moto 360, if you remember, was like the most exciting Android Wear watch.
Yeah. Because it was like,
it's this beautiful, like, when I bought my Android Wear, the first smartwatch I ever owned was the Moto 360. It just turns out that it's not good enough business, and so they're getting out of it, which is not great news for the industry as a whole. It is what it is. And then there's the other thing.
Sales weren't great?
I guess, you know. Motorola's in a weird spot right now, and they're trying to, you know, Lenovo's trying to figure out what to do with that brand, and I have a feeling that they're sitting there going, really trim it down to only the things that are huge successes. We're not in a, let's get creative and hope this market grows at some point. They've also announced that so the Moto Z is their most recent phone, and one of its big selling point is that it has has expansion ability, so that you can literally, we talked about this before, but like the back of the phone you can snap in different modules and it can become like a high quality speaker or it can become a high quality camera. There's all sorts of different stuff. Well, they're talking about how one of the mods that they're going to build, they're planning on coming out with, is a Tango mod. So right now, the Fab Pro, is it Lenovo?
Must be, right?
Fab Pro 2. It is. Same company, that makes sense. Yeah, so Lenovo, the Lenovo Fab Pro 2 is currently the only commercially available smartphone that you can buy that has Google's Project Tango software or hardware built into it, which is where it's like their augmented reality can take 3D scans of the world around it and build 3D models and do overlays on it. Well, the Moto Z is going to get a... at some point in the future, is going to get a module that you can snap on that will give it those abilities too, which is pretty neat.
They're jumping all in.
Yeah.
Lenovo. Differentiate yourself. I get it.
Lenovo's into it. They think it's the future. And I don't think they're wrong, actually. So in other news, so we hate HPE. They're the worst. But...
Serious traders. disclosure, I work for HPI.
Yeah, there we go. So HPE is back in the day, this was like over a year ago, they teased the future of computation and they called it the machine.
Oh my gosh, I remember that. So exciting and so let me down.
Yeah, so disappointing. Basically, it was this idea that they're going to use like the memristors to do all sorts of really cool, like, it was going to be really, really fast. Basically, their idea is they could build a server that would be incredibly fast compared to other systems. The prototype needs more nodes and memory to live up to its potential, but there's a good reason why HPE is optimistic. Basically, they got a prototype working. Simulations from the design phase suggest that a memory-driven computing system is multiple orders of magnitude faster at running code than conventional PCs, up to 8,000 times faster in some cases, which is pretty good, if true. Yeah. And while the company most wants to use the tech for servers and other high-end computing tasks, it notes that it's important, that this improvement could scale all the way down to the Internet of Things devices. Even your smart home could benefit from these performance leaps. As before, the biggest hurdle is making it all practical. The non-volatile memory needed to make this thing shine isn't due until sometime in 2018 or 2019, and they won't have widespread use of photonics until around the same time. So they're using all sorts of cool hardware and software and stuff to kind of get this thing up and running, but at least they got a working prototype which is pretty big news. If it works, it'll be huge, and, you know, it could be huge, and it will be awesome. I do know that I was talking to one of our uncle who is, he's trying to, I don't know how much he would be comfortable giving away too many details, but, like, we talk about guys who, like, early in the show, we talked about field programmable Gatorades and guys who design chips and stuff, and now it's a small exclusive club of really smart guys. He's one of those people. Like, he works for a giant competitor of Hewlett Packard's. And we were talking, I mentioned it to him and kind of talked about the potential of the system at one point. And his biggest criticism was the fact that I was like, yeah, they have to, like, build their own software for it, you know, and it's going to have its own operating system. And he was just like, oh, so it'll fail? It's like, what? And he was like, well, they're talking about how it's pretty unique, so it has to have its own software. And he was like, yeah, the thing is that people don't want, like, even if there's real performance boosts, people... like, you know, they want it to run Linux. Like, that's how you make things portable and movable. Like, ultimately, even if you have, like, your own software underlying everything, you have your own kernel, it's still gonna run Linux. Like, maybe you virtualize Linux, but it's gotta run Linux. So, you know, we'll see as this thing develops. You know, obviously, 2018 and 19 is a ways away. But you know, we'll keep you appraised of this exciting developing story. Speaking of your Internet of Things, though, MIT has got one that I actually really like. I'm really in on. So one of the neat things about alternating current is it generates a proportional magnetic field. And if you can sense that magnetic field, you don't actually have to, like, break into the wires to measure the amount of power and current running through the wire. So why this matters is a bunch of MIT... That's
how trackers work right now. So you trackers? Find wires in your wall.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah. And so MIT made these... This isn't amazing, like, breakthrough in science. It's just a great little chunk of engineering. They basically designed these tiny little chips that are, like, an inch long and, like, a quarter inch... wide, and they got a little, like, piece of metal on them that does the sensing, and it's got all sorts of wireless communication, and basically you strap them to your power system and it measures the current through your house, so you can kind of keep track of where your power is going. It's non-invasive, so you don't actually have to break it into anything. As they said, there are already ways to monitor household energy use, but they involve hiring a licensed electrician or cutting through power lines or pipes to attach expensive specialized equipment. MIT engineering professor, blah, blah, blah. With our system, you can install non-contact sensors using zip ties or even Velcro and use signal processing to measure power consumption. It could also serve as a way to tell when equipment needs maintenance or replacement. Yeah, this is one of those ones I'm going to say, yeah, from the MIT labs, which means they're expensive. Yeah, but this is cool and exciting because it's like, this is one of those, like, maintenance things that, I don't know, it might be really hard for people to get excited about, but for you and me, like, I'm trying to think of a good example of why this is a big deal. It's one of those ones where this is going to be really, really nice for people who, like, every once in a while in your life, it'd be great to have this information. And it's so rare, though, that the expense of really doing it never justifies it. Whereas the way MIT is going to go about this and what they're trying to set up, the hope is, the expectation is, that these things will be so affordable that you'll just install them and you'll just have this information. So even if you only ever use them, you know, once every 5 years to figure out, oh my gosh, our laundry machine really is using way more energy than it used to. I guess that means, like, this is going to be my example. Like, let's say you have a heating element that has gone haywire on your laundry machine, this thing would figure that out because it'd go, wow, there's a lot more power going to the laundry machine than there should be. And it can send you an alert just passively. Like, that's the sort of thing where if it's cheap enough and you can install them everywhere, the monitoring will just, your house will become smarter, which is pretty cool. And yeah, MIT, they're pretty smart fellas over there.
This is cool. I kind of also sent me down another track to a product called Sense, sense.com. It's a monitor. You put it above your, but I can't even remember what it's called now. Your electrical panel.
Yeah.
And it measures it all right there and somehow is able to assess them all out. Huh. That's interesting. Sweet. Let's see, how much are they charging for that? Get Sense. $250. Oh, jeez.
See, it's got to be cheaper than that.
Okay, all right.
And then lastly,
pretty awesome. Sorry, yeah, I just want to say like it. That's awesome. I'm in.
The last thing I wanted to mention is that we got some more elements, James. The building blocks of the universe. We got more opportunities,
really,
to do stuff. Yep. So this week,
how does that happen? I thought like we'd found them all. No, huh? Shows you. Plus, I paid attention in chemistry class.
That's kind of weird. I mean, like, basically, okay, so once you get into, like, the super heavy elements, and these elements aren't stable in their isotope form. So this is how it works. Basically, theoretically, you could have an atom that is, you know, you can be a scientist and say, I think there's an atom that is 700 protons large, which would be way off the periodic table. And you're right, that can exist. You can throw 700 protons together, theoretically, and have it stick together for a moment in time. But until you actually create that synthetically in a lab, measure it multiple times, like, the periodic table won't acknowledge that it exists. And so basically what's happened is they go through, and all of these elements we've theoretically known that they existed for a long time, and we've theorized about what their different properties are. But they finally actually went and made them in labs. They were able to verify them. And then there's this long process where people, they was element 113, 115, 117, and 118. And there's this long process where they basically have to, like, verify it and then come up with names. Unfortunately, we did not get one called Adam McAdam Face, and which would have been great. We got Nihonium and Moscovinium and Tennesseeni and Organisan. It's a really, really hard to... Moscovium is actually, you know, it's Moscow. Tennessean is Tennessee. Yeah.
Oh, horrible names.
I know. They're really bad. Real bad. But we got new elements, man.
Hey, new elements. Let's go build something.
They existed. The really exciting one is there's this theoretically... There's an idea that there might be a thing called the island of stability, that when you get into super heavy atoms, that because right now what happens is when atoms get too big, the weak nuclear force and the strong nuclear force, which are the things that keep atoms together, are literally atoms on the far side, or protons on the far side of the nucleus, are too far from the other protons to have an effect on each other. And so they kind of like, they just fall apart because the forces can't like reach the other side because they're too big. Well, there's this theorized idea of an island of stability, which is at certain sizes, they'll become so big again that the repulsive force of the protons being next to the electrical force of the protons being next to the protons will be overcome by weird nuclear forces, like sort of holding the whole thing together. And there's this, they're hoping that at some point you'll get to like 150 protons in the atom, and all of a sudden you'll be able to, they'll stick together. And then you'll have these super super heavy, super massive elements that will actually hang together for longer than a microsecond, and then you can do neat stuff with them, like throw them at things in the form of a bullet, cause a lot of damage. Which is essentially what a depleted uranium round is. They use the depleted uranium as it's not super radioactive, but it's crazy heavy. And so when they fire those rounds off, they smash with incredible momentum, even though they're not really large. They hit with the momentum of a cannonball, even though they're the size of a bullet, and do some serious damage. Good stuff. Why do we always jump to war, James? Why does it always got to be war?
It's the way of the world. It's
how we. You know what I really. You know what I really want. I want a period. I want a poster of the periodic table of elements with the bottom row, like in its proper place. So it's just a long stretched out. I think that would like look cool and unique. But like you can't buy that. And the reason why you can't buy that is because that's technically not the periodic table of elements. The guys who actually do this stuff, the IUPAC, the guys who are in charge of the periodic table of elements, part of the specification is that part is broken out below the rest of the periodic table of elements.
Do you know why? I don't remember why.
The reason why they did that is so that it'll fit on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and it's more legible than textbooks. It's not because it's right. It's just because it's legible. So it's all. But that's the.
Yeah, you can make your own.
You'd have to though.
A place that can print off large things.
That's actually. I might do that.
Just put it out there.
Got a couple weeks. Okay. Wait, so what happens in a couple weeks?
I don't know, like Christmas.
Oh, gotcha.
But just whenever you come up next.
I might do that.
If you got it done, we could even put it on canvas.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'd be sophisticated.
It's the joys of working at a printing company.
I might just do that. I'm sure
it's good, like, good quality, you know, like, don't... You know what I mean? Like, give me 300 DPI. Your system's going to hate you for it, but, you know.
You don't want 1,200 DPI? I mean, get cray.
You don't need it. It's prints at 300.
Well, that's lame.
There's somewhere it's like, they'll take the 8.5 by 11 and then blow it up.
Oh, yeah.
You just go, no, what are you doing? Stop.
Yay.
That's...
Be better.
Yes. Anyways, just putting that one out there.
Cool. I like it.
Cool. Awesome. That's the show. That's what we got. Ton of tech news. It's the holiday season. It's exciting. Things are still rocking and shaking. We'll be back next week. And I'm going to tease. We're going to have something pretty cool to give away.
Yeah.
So, last minute Christmas shopping. It's going to be awesome. Oh, I already saw your show title. That's awesome. Hashtag live authentic. too funny. Too funny. Awesome. Well, well, everybody, thanks for joining us and thanks for listening to episode 271. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget, you can check out all the show notes and all the links at furloughbros.com. You can also sign up to have us email you whenever there's a new show so you can get all the links just sent directly to your inbox. Be efficient about these things. It's kind of like if this, then that. Kind of. If you give us your email, then we'll send you the links so you don't have to look for them. It's automation. Finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. And so if you would like to contribute, we have 4 different levels. We've got fanboys, nerds, junkies, and mavens, each of which have their own levels of rewards. Again, you can check it all out at furrowbros.com. All right. I am James Furlow. Let's see here. My Manchester by the Sea, I love it / hate it, brother, is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.